Hello and welcome to Exploring the Blank Page, a podcast for readers and writers of young adult fiction. I'm host Emily Hendricks, writer of YA sci-fi and fantasy, and my co-host is Kristen Crum, author of the YA rom-com It Happened at Christmas. The Blank Page is where we all start, published or not, and we're excited to share stories that inspire your writing or influence your next book choice. Now let's get to the episode. Hello and welcome back to The Blank Page. Ooh, today's interview, you guys, you're in for a treat. We have author Katie Stein here today, and we started off with just a bang, but of course we hadn't pressed record already, so we had a whole conversation and then wanted to bring you all into that conversation. So yes, we do go back a little bit and talk about what we were talking about before, which I think is so important. I think this is going to be a big one for anyone out there who has really desired to be published by, you know, maybe one of those big five publishers or are looking for a traditional contract, which we totally support, but maybe you haven't found that success yet, or maybe you haven't found that avenue and you're wondering what's next, what's going to happen. Our conversation with Katie just really opened up a lot of things, I think for Kristen and I both, about what success actually looks like and being able to be okay with that changing. It is a moving target, like Katie says. And gosh, I just feel fired up after this episode.
I do too. So if you are ready to be fired up, if you are ready to be inspired and maybe have your idea of what success looks like really changed, sit back and enjoy this episode with Katie Stein. We are so excited today to have Katie Stein with us. And guys, we have probably been talking for the last 10 or 15 minutes and just about so many great nuggets. And we're going to jump back into that conversation so that you guys can also hear it. But before we do that, Katie, can you tell our listeners a little bit about you and your writing journey so far?
Yeah, for sure. I actually always hate these questions, like, tell us about you in a nugget.
Right?
Like, I don't know who I am in a nugget. I'm married. I have two kids. You know, I write. I used to be an education assistant. I actually still am. I just am at home with my kids during the season and writing, of course. And then I like Star Wars. I drink copious amounts of coffee. I feel like, you know.
We like that.
Yeah. So I think those are kind of like the broad strokes of Katie's life if you were to look in. I actually, this is a bit of a pride thing, is that for the longest time we didn't know how to decorate our house. And somewhere along the line, my husband and I realized that we could find really nice Star Wars art that you can like put on the wall that people don't, they like walk past and they don't realize that they just walk past Endor and you're like, ha-ha.
I love it. So, I love it. Yes.
We kind of
like secretly nerdy.
Yeah. We're like, see, we're adults. We have art on our walls. And then it's not till people really look at it that they realize.
Decorating the house is always so hard. Like somebody asked me once, like, what's your decorating style? And I was like, I have books and plants.
I guess that's my style. Books.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think you like, especially in like the Instagram world, you want to have like a nice aesthetic. You want to have, you know, like these pretty, and I am a little bit more chaotic and things just land in our house. And, and anyway, so the Star Wars art is a piece of pride.
I like it.
Yeah. That's the short version.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey to publication? Like, how did we get Glass Helix in our hands?
Yeah, it's a big one. It's interesting because I don't know how often. I guess it's probably more common than we realize that there's these big long journeys behind a book. You know, so like the first idea for Glass came over 10 years ago, and. But I wasn't at a place in my life where I was willing to share my writing. And when I think about my writing journey, I always feel like it's important to share like just maybe a bit of the like the self-belief that I had, like the mistaken self-belief I had. I deal with ADHD. I was undiagnosed as a kid. I had a lot of these like really negative beliefs about myself. I have trouble spelling. So I'm not the grammar master, you know? And so it was just like, I knew from a young age, I wanted to be an author. I knew I wanted to write books, but it felt like a really far off thing and just out of reach. And so it took into my adult life to unravel a lot of that. And all of a sudden I remember like, so I'd have story ideas and I'd journal and I would write my whole life, but I wasn't chasing anything down because I didn't feel like it was for me. And so then you know, like, you grow up, thank heavens, you know, there's a lot of like talk about like, oh, I'm, you know, a certain age and this is terrible, and I'm like, no, like, there are such good things about getting older. I am really loving my 40s, you know, like, I feel like with each decade I'm finding myself more, I'm able to like unravel things that I've been carrying that I just shouldn't be carrying. And you're like, oh, let's get rid of this and let's step into like what we're really meant to do. So I'm enjoying that part of it. And part of that is like my writing journey was like recognizing like, wait a minute, I want to write a book. I can write a book. My process is maybe a lot slower than some others, but it's still possible. And I think that's why I want to share that part of the writing journey, because I know that there's other people that deal with, you know, either this sort of thing with ADHD or with other, you know, obstacles in their path. And but I think that desire to write is like the biggest thing, right? I think if you've got a story in you, it hurts to not get that story out there. So anyway, so that's definitely the start of it, was like me actually recognizing that I couldn't. And so at about 5 years ago, just about 6 years ago now, I got the first draft down of Glass, and then had to like figure out querying life. Talk to
what do I do
authors.
With it now? Yeah.
Well, yeah. And like, you know, it, I think for anybody stepping into publishing, you're like, you're trying to like pull back the curtain and be like, so what do I do now? And where do I go? And, that's a big process of like trying to figure out, like, you know, just simple things like that feel simple now. Oh, like write a query letter. You're like, write a what? Do what? What am I supposed to do? You know? So, you know, I started querying it, and I had, you know, like, it was great, actually. It was a really good process because I got some really great feedback. But as we were saying, you know, like, there's a lot of like talk about dystopian novels that they were just kind of dead in the water, and that sci-fi, you know, even YA sci-fi a little bit, it's a bit of a hard sell, you know? So it was just like, I was getting good feedback, but not any forward motion. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I kind of carried on writing and, other works while it like, it just sat. And it actually, somewhere in between a manuscript, I decided it was originally written as an adult novel. And then I decided that it would fit better in the YA space, that it was really a YA story. And so I went back and rewrote the whole thing.
Wow.
And then I thought, I don't know. I didn't query it after that. I just left it. And so I had one friend, you know, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I wouldn't explain the reasons why, but I rewrote it. And then my one friend read it for me. She loved it. I thought, oh, that's great. And that apparently at the moment that was enough. And then so I just had it kind of sitting on the shelf. And last year a friend nudged me and just said, hey, like, this, you know, small publishing house, Stag Beetle Books, is, I think it'd be a good fit. So I queried them and they picked it up and they loved it. And so it was just really fun to have like people excited about a story that I had really just kind of set aside. So that's been pretty fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Well, and I think it gives us hope, right? That because I will say this, I am the person who says, and you guys have heard me say this many times, but like, write the next book, you know, sometimes that book is just it's not the right time in the industry, or it's not the right time in your life, or it's not the right, you know, there's not the right editor or agent or whatever for it. But I do want to say, on the other side of things, there are those books that just like stay with us, right? Like, I mean, a good example in addition to yours is just like Suspended in the Stars. I mean, it wouldn't be out in book form today had it not
like still been like, hey, I still, you know, tapping in the back of my brain. I still want to be out there, you know, in the world. You're writing all those other things, but don't forget about me. And I'm happy for that. So I do want to give hope, especially for the people who, you know, they've written that one book and it's just like, this is their like book, their book baby. Like you can write other books, but that's the book, you know, that holds all your hopes and dreams and stuff. It can still come out. It may not be your first book and that's okay. But, you know, so I do want to say that because I'm not walking it back. I still believe you should write the next book.
Well, and too, I mean, we were talking, you know, before we actually hit record and we were talking about how, I think, Katie, you brought this up, how, you know, we are, I don't know if we're taught or we just have like this ingrained belief in our head that like there is one way to get published. You know, you have to write the book and you have to get the agent and then the agent, you know, gets you into publishing houses. But there are so many different options today and you don't have to do that one thing to get that book baby out.
Yeah,
especially absolutely. If it's.
Well, and I think that's what, you know, I was sharing that with you guys because I think seeing other authors, you know, take strides into these kind of areas that maybe are a little bit like, I know that they're established, but still maybe untested in terms of like the larger industry. Mm-hmm. And it's inspiring and encouraging to me, you know, like this is my debut novel. I have other things that I've written that I am querying, that I'm trying to move forward with. And it doesn't get less daunting, you know, trying to, like, I would love to be able to tell people, it's like, yeah, you do it once and then you're totally confident and everything's great and it's just easy peasy pie, but, you know, it's not. And we still feel with all those, like, sort of same hesitations or insecurities or, you know, questions. And so it's just, I love seeing people being brave and, like, you know, looking at the Kickstarter path. And I definitely have, like, deconstructed in my own head, like, I think as you know, you're learning about publishing, what do you see? You see the big chain bookstores, you know, the big publishers, and that's what you're like, okay, I'm supposed to do that. But then as you go along, I was talking with a friend the other day, it's like, it's such a moving target. And I think we put a value on traditional publishing that it's a meritocracy, you know, like this idea that it's like, only the best get through and anything that doesn't get through is not good. And I'm just have learned over and over and over again, that is not true. And it, you know, it comes down so much to market and timing and, you know, like all these different, like who's talking to, you know, it's much more arbitrary than we would like to believe, because I think it's not that the books that are traditionally published are not worthy. I'm not saying that at all, but it's just, you know, like, I think it's easy to sometimes discount yourself if you don't find that path. And so being able to like unravel some of that and go, wait a minute, like there are a lot more options out there, whether it's small press or indie press or, you know, self-publishing or Kickstarters or, and I'm, you know, talking with my husband a lot these days about what's, what's the new path? What's the path that helps you find your readership in a meaningful way so that the people that love, you know, these dystopian novels that maybe other people are writing off can find them. Like I want to find those people. It's not about wanting to find everybody. I just want to find the people that are going to enjoy and love this story the way that I enjoy and love this story, you know? So, but it's never a clear, like, it's not like there's sign mark, you know, like, hey, this is the way, go over here.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's a moving target. And I would just say, even from my own experiences, thinking like, oh, you know, when I was younger, especially, if I'm not published by this house, I'm a failure, you know? Not true at all. And just like the times have changed. And I think that that's what matters is that we see, and I just wrote a post about this for my Patreon page, actually, but like, redefine what success means to you, because you can't let, you know, oh, I want to hit the New York Times best. Well, that would be great, but that may not be what success looks like for me. Like you said, finding my readership, that's success. And I want that to be the focus versus some kind of accolades. And who knows? And in this post, I had pointed this out, like there are so many authors who found like what we would define as like that classic success, you know, massive sales. They found it on you know, maybe their 10th book, or, you know, they almost gave up and weren't sure what was going to happen. And then what happens? Well, that book just goes wild. And I don't even know that they would know that that was the book, right? Like, you know, maybe it was just the next book they were writing. They were really excited about the project. And then the public just took it and went crazy. So I just think it's such a moving target. I love that.
Yeah.
I like what you were saying, Emily. We can't always see the journey. We just see where they land. I think it's V.E. Schwab, like, had a – like, I really feel like she all of a sudden became on everybody's radar when it was like she signed a $1 million book deal. Mm-hmm. I think it was with Tor. Mm-hmm. And, like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, my gosh, yes, that's the dream. That's what I want to do. But we fail to look back at, like, the 8 books that she had already on the shelf that – like nobody, I mean, she had a following, of course, but like they weren't widely known. And so
she herself said that she was close to quitting, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
You'd share that with me.
And it's just like, we just have to remember that there is a journey to it. It's not overnight success. It's the showing up daily or whatever that looks like for you, but showing up and getting the work done and putting that work in.
Absolutely.
To reach that point of you have reached your success. And I will
and writing the next book.
Yes. And writing the next book. Yeah. Well, I mean, and like even Victoria, I'm on her newsletter list. I love her newsletter list, but she is always talking about how she always struggles with the next book that she's writing and the next book and feeling of like, this isn't going to be good. This is the one that's going to end my career. And so, I mean, I feel like even though from the outside looking in, we're like, oh yes, the $1 million deal. Like that is my goal. Like even when you hit that goal, you're still going to have, like you were saying, Katie, it doesn't like wipe away all those insecurities. They're still there and you will still struggle with them.
Yeah. That's why I think that internal work is so important too, you know, because it's so easy to be like torn apart by, you know, really, I guess you could probably say this with any creative industry, but you know, like it's hard to put yourself out there and be rejected and have all these different things. And I think doing the internal work so that you know why you're doing it and you know, like where your value comes from, whether people, you know, are singing your praises or nobody knows you exist, like, you know, coming back to that place of like, okay, I need to do this work. For me, I'm like, it is part of like why I really believe I am on this planet. Not because I think my stories are so groundbreaking that, you know, the planet could do that, but it's like, this is my little piece that I am meant to like deliver back to the world. And so I need to be faithful to do that. And like you said, that doesn't mean, you know, that I'm writing every day copious amounts because, you know, but faithfulness for me is about showing up and moving forward, even on the days that I don't feel like I'm moving forward, even when I'm stuck, because I have in mind that it's like, again, I think like you were saying, like that defining what success is to you is super, super important about being able to keep everything else in perspective. And I think that does change along the way. You know, like at one point for me, that was finishing the draft. It was like, I need to get this book down on paper. That felt like a daunting undertaking, you know, like that first draft that you ever complete, you're like, that's a major milestone. At least it was for me. I don't know. Maybe some people can rattle them off. But for me, that was such a big deal to recognize. I'm like, oh, I can do this. And then recognizing that I am the queen of rewriting. I will rewrite books way too many times. But it's just like, but it's a little bit of like, I think where the magic happens for me. And so it's just, yeah. So, you know, like first it was getting it down. Now for me, it's really about finding my readers. Like I want to find the people who love this stuff, that love the same genres, the same space that I do. And I don't want to connect in like, I don't know, there's always this business side, right? Like obviously we want to build platforms and we want to build followings, but I don't want to be insincere in doing it. Like, I just feel like we are all so tired of being marketed to. So it's just like, can we just not do that? Like as much as we like still need to market, I'm that's another area that I'm trying to be like, how do I do this in a meaningful way that isn't like trying to sell somebody something, but rather trying to connect, hey, like I have something that I think you'll enjoy, and then you know, so that mutual like exchange more than like me pushing something on people.
Right. It kind of makes me think of my local indie bookstore. I'm trying to get Suspended in the Stars in there. They're currently reading an arc of it, but I had a conversation with the owner and I loved her perspective and the way that she approached it. And she was just saying that she's seen the most success because there are several local authors in our area when they've come in. And whether they're just there for the day and they just get to chat with whoever comes in, which sounds really daunting to me, but also something I'm willing to try. But she said, rather than being like, hey, do you want to buy my book? It was so much more of a, hey, can I tell you about my story? Like, can I tell you about my book? And I loved having her kind of reposition my mind on that. I don't know that I would just be like, hey, buy my book anyways. I'd probably just be like sitting there and I'm like, hi, there's some great books over on this shelf that I've read, you know, like totally like passing over my book. Because I totally feel the same way. But in just being able to share a little bit, like you're saying, I think that's the spark, right? That's the connection, being able to say, well, do you like Star Wars? And did you like the movie The Greatest Showman? Or like whatever. Kind of like, did you like, you know, Divergent or whatever? Because I feel like I'm getting some Divergent vibes a little bit from Glass Helix here. Absolutely. But like things like that where you're creating that connection point and it's not I think it is about how we approach it too, right? Like if my end goal is just to sell books, I'm probably missing the point. Like I get it from a business standpoint. Yes, that does need to happen if we're going to stay in business. I would write even if I made no money though. So I feel like you're the same way. I think Kristen is too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kristen literally is.
I feel like I'm literally, that's why I write right now. Right.
You mean there's another way?
Let's be honest. I'm not making money right now.
But we will. But that, like you're saying, that faithfulness, right? And so, like, if our first touch point is just going to be like, hey, like, let's just have a conversation. If you want to hear about my book, awesome. Don't feel the need to let you have to buy it. But if you want to, awesome too. But yeah, I totally feel you on that. I think that's I loved her advice. I was like, this is very wise, but she's a bookseller and she gets it. Like her life is books. So
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's funny because even with like the whole, I never want people who aren't, you know, like I don't want people to feel obligated or pushed into reading my book. Like, so my husband's always getting after me because I'm almost like reverse marketing. Right. And I'm like, like I wrote this book and I love it, but you know, you don't have to read it. You could just like, I don't know. He's like, stop it. So he helps me with that. But the funny thing is sometimes you like are surprised where your audience lands, you know, like, so my husband works in the trades and I can tell you that he has been like pitching my book. He is a salesman, but yeah, my book to all his coworkers. So I have, I'm like, oh no, like all these like men, you know, reading my YA dystopian romance, like what is going to happen? And we've sent more books to his job site than I don't awesome. Like, it just cracks me up, but I love it. And you know, you don't know where you're actually going to find your readership. They've been so gracious and so great. Even if they were strong-armed into reading it by my husband, I'm not really sure. But, you know, it's just like that whole, like, sometimes you just need to put it out there because you don't know who's actually going to connect. You can kind of make assumptions.
I think we're seeing a theme, right? Like with like publishing, if we're thinking that it's only one way, I feel like the same thing has to be true a little bit for our marketing. If like, because I understand that we do things for a reason, and like obviously there's marketing standards because it works, etc.
Yeah.
But okay, if you're taking a slightly different approach, like with a smaller publishing house or whatnot, independently publishing, maybe we also need to think a little outside the box in our marketing too, right? Yeah. I love that. Let's just ship our books off with our husbands.
maybe they just need to be in charge of our like marketing. Oh, like we'll write the books and then they can just market them.
Yeah, we have had that conversation.
If it was left up to me, I will sell Emily's book all day long before I know. Even try to sell mine.
Yeah. I know. That's why we need each other, I think, too, right? Because it's so much like I feel that freedom to be like, oh, I've read this book. It's awesome. Go read it. And I'm a little bit more out there, you know, but that's why you need your people. So I think that's
absolutely. Absolutely.
Exactly.
So because you were just talking about this and we are the blank page, so we love to dive in a little deeply into how an author approaches the page. Now, you've kind of hinted a little bit at you're a rewriting queen, which I say more power to you. But tell us a little bit about how you do approach your blank page. And I would love to hear, especially from like maybe where you started with that first draft of Glass and then like you have written other things in between. Has that process changed and what does it look like for you?
Okay. Yeah. I, when I was like drafting Glass, I think there was like such a desperation. I was writing it by hand, which, that has changed, but actually was super helpful for me for the first draft for my first book. And I think part of it was just like how it worked with my focus, my attention. Writing by hand is, I'm able to focus better. I don't know why. I don't know if there's science behind it or it's just weird in my own head, but I could just get thoughts down. And I think maybe part of it is that you can't edit. You can't go back, you know, so it's just that like, just get it out. Raw. So it,
yeah,
it freed me from like, oh, I need to go fix. I just wrote by hand. And you know, it's a lot of words by hand. I have some full notebooks, but that was definitely helpful, I think, just to get it out. And then, so with Glass, then the next draft was transcribing it into my computer, which, so like, of course, as you're doing that, you're editing. And then I think, you know, I would be embarrassed to tell you how many passes that draft had, but easily 20. And just because I get a little fixated and go over it, not because you actually
need
to edit your draft that many times. Like, I don't think I should be like trying, don't follow my footsteps in this movie, but but I think, you know, just it was a lot of figuring out, right? Like as you go, like figuring out what works. And for me, it was a lot of like, you know, talking with my critique group, an interesting kind of thing that we found is we compared different writing, maybe styles or approaches to how we draft, was recognizing that I wrote one story however many times, many, many, many times. And my friends wrote many stories. But I think in the process, we were learning very similar things. You know, we were finding our writing voice. We were finding, you know, like our preferred tenses. And we were finding, you know, like, oh, what does this story need? What sort of tenses? You know, like we were figuring out all those like structure and craft things in our first draft. I just happened to do it with the same story and they happened to do it over many stories. And so it was good to kind of like recognize it's like, you know, whatever journey you're taking through that, it's not, you're learning the same things. You have to, you know, like really, if you're committed to the craft and you're committed to writing, you're going to figure this stuff out. Especially because I think as writers, we're readers, right? So you're going to know when it's hitting and you're going to hear it and you're like, oh, there's something not quite right here. There's something in this story that's missing. And I think that sort of self-examining of your own manuscript where you can kind of pick it apart. And I think that's the other thing that happened with Glass that was excellent was, like you said, I went on to the next story. So it was able to sit and rest. And while I had like written a whole nother story and was just starting to query that, is when I went back and rewrote it as a YA because I had this light bulb moment and I was just like, oh, part of it is it's just not, it that doesn't serve this story. You know, yeah. So it was just, you know, like, I think you can see those things when you step back. And so as much as I'm like a little bit, you know, like get fixated and get stuck on a story for a while, it was a huge benefit to put it aside, move on to the next thing and write forward.
Well, and that is something I absolutely love because you knew there was something, there wasn't something right about your manuscript. And instead of just like tossing it, you figured out what worked. And I read, I can't even remember which author, but I'm on so many authors' newsletters list. She had sent, she basically said that sometimes when you get stuck, it's not about trashing the entire thing. Mm-hmm. You just have to look at it from a different angle. And that's basically what you did with Glass. You know, you wrote it as an adult and something wasn't sitting right in your head. And you're like, put it aside, keep working. And then, you know, your light bulb moment, there wasn't anything wrong with it. It just needed to be changed. You needed to change audiences. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I really, really do.
I think it's funny
too. Bold because... enough to do it. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, I just think it, to me, it seems like a lot of work. I mean, I know that it was, but I can assume that it was. And yeah. To me, like I don't know that I would want to put in that work. And so I think the fact that you did speaks to not only you as a writer, but also to the story. Like it was that important to you that it needed to be right. And I am, maybe just because I wrote so much as a ghostwriter that I'm able to like, I'm done with that and put it aside or whatever. But like, I think that just makes that story so much more potent, I guess, if I can use that word.
Yeah,
because you let it change into what it needed to be. Instead of just like Kristen said, trashing it.
And I think it's funny because I think that's just like different. There's value on both sides because, you know, like I think I can definitely maybe sabotage myself a little bit where I get so hung up on things. I mean, I could probably still change things and edit forever, right? Like, I don't know if everybody else feels that way, but I'm hoping so because I'm just like, oh yeah, I could have changed that line or this line or whatever. But, you know, really, I think it's taught me so much through that process. And I actually like, even with, you know, once I started working with Stag Beetle, they were like, well, this is a romance. I was like, yes. And they're like, but why aren't you leaning into it? And I don't know why, because I always loved that. Like, I've always loved having real romance in science fiction stories, which, you know, from when I was a kid, wasn't as common, you know, like there would be like a random female character that might trot through the story and you're like, oh yes, they're in love. But, you know, we don't ever see them. We don't ever see, you know, you're like, oh. So I really did want to write, you know, science fiction that had some heart and some, you know, true emotion behind it. But even like having somebody else just say, hey, no, lean into this a little bit more. That was helpful because I, for whatever reason, I was still kind of like my old sci-fi roots were holding back a bit. I mean, I loved that about Suspended in the Stars. I feel I'm like, oh, you know, front and center, like romance goals are right there.
You gotta find that balance, right? I was like, how do I balance this between not too much action, but not too much romance? Cause then it can get like, slower. Yeah. That's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I think you found that balance.
You did, for sure.
It's so great.
Yeah. I'm like, now I have to find it for the second book.
I have faith in you. You can do it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I realized I didn't kind of finish the thought there with just like how I approach manuscripts now. You know, I think like it's interesting, just my process has definitely changed. And I think some of that is just skill and confidence and, you know, practice, really. For my second novel, it is an adult fantasy so far. We joke that I just haven't found its true form yet, but we'll see. I think that one will stay adult, but, you know, I wrote it in the computer first, you know, like learning how to like, focus. A lot of it for me is like learning how to work with my own makeup, you know, like, and so I was listening to Sarah Ellis, you know, talking about front loading her day. That definitely is me too. Like if I look at my to-do list for everything else, I will never write because there's everything else, you know, going on. So having to like make sure that I carve out time and keep it the priority, which can be hard when you're, you know, in a family and, you know, I'm a mom and I'm trying to do everything else. That's a tricky balance, but it's important to me, and it's, my family is really supportive. So it's just setting aside time so that I can write first is a big deal. And I still try to write forward, you know, like if I keep going back and editing, I get stuck. I have to get a draft down first and then I'm allowed to rewrite. So I actually, like, I'm planning to move forward again. I'm pushing myself forward for Nano, and not because I feel like Nano is like the you know, like the key where you have to write 50,000 words, but having like a really intense deadline really plays in for ADHD, you know, like that sort of sense of urgency, the like the like the goals that you can mark along the way, all that stuff like plays in so well. And so it has worked for me in the past. Sometimes I haven't been able to do it just because life is crazy and November's busy and, you know, stuff like that. So it's not like it's the only way, but for me, that's really been helpful just to set aside, like, I am drafting now and I can just spit out, I won't spit out a whole manuscript, but I can spit out a bunch. So let me go from there.
I love that.
Well, and being a busy mom and having a family and having commitments and when you do carve out your time, what does like a typical writing day look like for you? Do you write every day? Do you have specific days that you like to write? And do you have any like writing habits that you have put into place so that when you do sit down to do the writing, you can just like go off and go forward and get those words down.
Yeah. It's again, like this is another place where it's a moving target. And I think you have to go with the age and stage and where you're at. Like it was very different when my kids were younger, you know, they just need more and they need mom. And sometimes you can't control that time. So, but I have teenagers now. So again, another like bonus of, you know, getting older is your kids get older too. And they're like, they're amazing. And so I really, what a typical day in my head looks like, whether it ever really plays out this way, is like coffee first. We have the little sign in our kitchen. It's like, first always. I drink the coffee, then I do the things. So that is,
always.
That is the mantra around here. So, you know, for me, it's really important to get set up. So I like, which it shouldn't be that much set up. You should sit down with a computer and be good to go. But no, I need to make sure that I have my pen, my notebook, and my coffee. And oh, and then you got to make sure you take your bathroom break before you sit down. Oh, I need my cuddly blanket and my pillow. And then, you know, like it's ridiculous, but I get set up. Once I'm in my little nest of writing nest, I try to put in earbuds, put them on sound cancel or noise canceling or whatever. And just play some music and go. I have had to, like, I think the shift in, like, once you know, I have a book out there that I'm also trying to now, you know, launch and promote and share and talk on social media and all this other stuff. Those things can really pull at you in terms of like what you're trying to do with your writing time. So I've just, again, my husband, what would I do without him? He's helping, you know, strategize, like, okay, set aside, like block time a little bit more. So it's not just like everything happens during writing time, but now I can do writing. I do a lot of beta reading, you know, so I've been reading a lot, but those things can take over too, more than, you know, household chores take over, this stuff takes over. So just putting everything into its place. But I'm trying to learn to put that writing piece first, you know, get some words down, do some editing, whatever I need to do on my writing, get that done. And then I can move into the other stuff. And then I move into the day, you know. So I would sit there all day. I can, but usually life pulls me forward and I need to like carry on into other things. But yeah, that's kind of a typical thing is it's just I need to get it done early and I need to like block out everybody and everything else as much as possible. It doesn't happen, but I try.
So we have so enjoyed talking with you, Katie. I'm sure we could just talk all day long, but it's time to jump into the lightning round. And before we get there, can you tell us what's coming up next for you?
Well, I hope. are we allowed to say that? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I am querying the adult fantasy that I've written. It has like, I always give it working titles. Sometimes people do big reveals, but I don't have, I don't have mental space for it. So I've just been calling it Earthbound. And so I'm querying Earthbound right now. And with the thought that it's like you said, it's like, if you can find a traditional published home for it, fantastic. You know, that extends your reach and, you know, hopefully gets it out there. I'm all for it. But I'm also like, I have my plan B, plan C kind of already lined up. And so I'm moving forward with that. And I am planning on drafting it. That's going to be a duology. I'm calling it Of Earth and Sky. And so that duology, I'm drafting the second one during Nano. And then I have another YA sci-fi that I've got in the back burner. Like, there's just like, you know, the list of like things. Knowing my like writing timeline, I'm probably planned out to the end of the decade, but yeah, so there's more stories coming, and I think it's just a matter of figuring out how I'll deliver them, but there's more stories coming.
I will say that super fun if readers wanted to get like a little sneak peek at Earthbound and what you're working on. You have a fun like inspiration board on your website and a little bit like what it's about. I really enjoyed like looking at all of that this morning.
Thank you.
And you have hunky heroes.
Oh man. Yeah. Actually, this is why like I loved like Renner in Suspended in the Stars too, because I was like, oh, another hunky hero. I feel like in general, like we've moved from like hunky heroes to like, you know, the lithe kind of like, I don't know, that's been the hot guy, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I was just
right.
You know, I just was really excited to have my kind of like muscle bound guy.
Yeah, I do like it.
Yeah,
I was just gonna ask if you give yourself a timeline. I know I did this when I was querying a couple of years back. I was like, okay, if in 6 months it's not here, or I haven't heard anything, or whatnot, you know, obviously my agent kind of depends on, or like she kind of helps me decide those timelines. Mm-hmm. But do you give yourself a timeline like that, or is it more of a wait and see because you've got other projects that are taking up your focus?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what I have done. I think it's been more like I come up with a query list, you know, like, okay, these are, you know, agents or presses that I want to query, and just working my way through the list. So like Earthbound has actually been half queried, but then in the middle of querying, Glass got picked up. And so it kind of like everything just got put on hold. So I'm kind of like coming back, and my thought is I'm going to finish querying out that list. And, and then from there, that's kind of where I'm going through. And I think it's changed so much. It's so much slower. Like from when I was querying Glass, response times were just wildly different. And then after COVID, everything just seemed to like ground to a halt. And so it's just like, I'm not holding my breath waiting. I'm going to query out this list. If they're like one of those people that isn't going to get back to me for 6 months, I'm, you know, not to say I wouldn't wait, but I'm moving forward with my projects, right? Like you said, I've got other things that I'm writing, other things I'm working on. So this is like a piece of it. I query and I'm writing something else, because I think for myself, like if you're waiting on publishing before you move on to your next project, you're going to be waiting a long time, and there's a lot of downtime that way. And so I just, I'll be working on the second book, and then they can let me know if they want it.
It's so funny. I love to tell this story. So I, after this was like at least, 2021, I guess it would be, which maybe it was earlier than that. I don't know. You can tell me, Kristen. But whenever I was actually like submitting Suspended in the Stars out, like we were on sub, and I told my husband, I was like, yeah, it'll probably be like 6 months before I hear anything. And he was like, what? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's just, he was like, no, like they'll at least say they got it, right? And I was like, probably not, honestly. Because I mean, it's coming through my agent, so it's just going out, you know? And he's like, no, no industry works like that. And I was like, the publishing industry works like that. Yes. I mean, like, believe me, I'm not, I literally think he thought that I was trying to like joke with him, or like, you know, pull the wool over his eyes. I was like, no, 100%. This is a typical timeline. And that's just that's the industry. They won't tell you. Sometimes they won't even tell you if it's a no, you know?
Oh, the ghosting. Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah. So thankfully, I mean, we got answers. They were happy, but they were not accepting. You're like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, which is another weird thing where they're like, we love it and we think you're doing great, but we're not gonna buy it. And you're like, oh, thank you.
Like, I feel affirmed and also disappointed.
Yes, like, yes, at the same time. Yeah, actually, this is a bit of a side note, but on the husband thing, oh my goodness, when I was telling Ed, you know, about the process and trying to explain to him, you know, like agents and blah blah blah, he is like helper guy. He's just on it. So one day he phoned an agent and was like, because I, at the time I had an offer from a small press and he's like, we need to check this. He's like, well, who do we talk to? Well, anyway, he just took it upon himself. He phoned an agent, ended up on the phone with this guy. And he was like, hey, my wife, you know, sure. I was just like mortified. I was like, this is not how we do things. And he just was like bull in the head. He had a good old chat with this guy. They talked. I'm like, I don't even know how you got a hold of him. Of course, like, how do you do that? I don't know.
Who does that? Yeah.
It was so funny.
I love it. Because you get so into the, like, we know, right? Like, we're in this writing world. We know what's, like, appropriate and all these things. But the book world is very different than, like, the business world, too, where you might be able to just call somebody up. And I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's, like, kind of like an epic Ed story where he's just like, oh, I'll just call an agent for you. I'll just do that. We're like, oh, my goodness.
I love it. Yeah. This is that's champion awesome. Ed. He needs, like, a t-shirt.
Yes.
Oh man. All right. I will bring us into the lightning round. Oh man. So can you name a few books or just one that you are reading right now?
Oh, I actually just put down all my books, but I just finished Suspended in the Stars, which I absolutely adored. That was so fun. I just felt like it was like, oh, all the genre things that I love, but then still fresh and, you know, sweet. And I love the romance. Anyway, it was fantastic. So shout out to you on that one. That was so fun to read.
I promise we always ask this question. It's not because of that. tell me more. No, I'm just kidding.
Tell me more about the book. Yeah. No, you know, it truly was fantastic. That was a great read. And then I have been catching up on the Sanderson Kickstarter books. So I was I read the Wizard what was that one called? The Wizard one. Yeah. and medieval or the Wizard's Guidebook to Medieval England, I think it's called. And I just finished Yumi and the Nightmare Painter. That one was that's been my favorite.
I've heard
so
such
far.
Good things. I can't wait to audio.
Yeah.
That one's on my like request list from the library.
Yeah. You know what I loved about that one was it felt like in the themes, in the like things that the characters were dealing with and processing, it felt like a love letter to creatives in the exact places that we are, right? Like, what do you do when art is like, it's so vulnerable and you try to put it out there and you're like rejected? What do you do when you're like, are trying to pick yourself up off of the, you know, from those places? It was just, I found like, I loved that part of it, you know? So anyway, it was a good one. Those are my, the ones I've read.
I might just have to skip waiting and just go ahead and order.
Yeah. And I actually loved seeing all the art in those books. Like, this is the fun of like seeing something published maybe outside of the box. You know, they're Kickstarters, they have this thing, but the art in these books is just so phenomenal. And to me, it's just really been fun to like see a collaboration that comes into like such a beautiful package. It's been pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm still kicking myself I didn't back at the physical tiers. I just did the audiobook ones. But at the time, it was financially wise for us. But past Emily is not future Emily, and future Emily is a little mad, but that's okay.
Well, past Kate definitely didn't. I was like, we cannot afford this. No, I like look at it, it's so cool, but I'm not going to do it. And past Ed was the hero who was just like, let me do this. So anyway, that has been my
there
gift
he
all year long.
He needs a t-shirt. Oh, we like Ed.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
Math talk for like all my writing friends, I think, because he's just, he is that really good champion.
That's awesome. All right. Well, who are some of your favorite authors? Obviously, I'm going to guess Brandon Sanderson, but who else?
I only discovered Sanderson a couple years ago and I fell down that rabbit hole hard because I wasn't like, I'm not really super widely read in fantasy. My other fantasy author that I adore is Patrick Rothfuss. And again, he's like almost the exact opposite as Sanderson, right? He's got just like these couple books or whatever. I just love his writing. But for sci-fi, I'm a Timothy Zahn fan all day long. Okay. His take on let me tell you.
Let me add some books to my TBR.
I just feel like because you know he wrote the original trilogy after so the original book trilogy after the original Star Wars trilogy, and kind of extended those storylines. Then he's gone back and done all the Thrawn storylines. He has other books too that are fantastic. Just classic sci-fi. It's good fun. If you like sci-fi, that's, I'd definitely recommend.
Definitely. What is your favorite trope?
I sat there and thought about this one. I was like, what is my favorite trope? I don't even know if this is an official trope, but I love any story where like weakness is hiding power, right? Like when you've got like either the hero is falling down or, you know, whatever, but there's this moment of weakness and then power is exposed. That gets me every single time. I'm just like, oh, love it.
I like it. We need to name that. That's a great trope. Yeah. I mean, maybe there is a name, but I haven't heard it, but I love it. So I did see that you have traveled. At least that's what your bio says. So, but you know, who knows? Maybe you just made that up. No, just kidding. No. I'm kidding.
But we are writers.
If you could travel to any three places, what would be the like your top three places on your list right now?
Oh, I was just talking with somebody about this yesterday too. Right now I'd actually travel to the States to go see like these dear, dear people that I have spent the last few years with as like close critique partners, but never met. So I would be, I would come visit the US of A.
Because you're in Canada, I guess. If our listeners don't know, you're in Canada. So
I've been told that my accent gives me away. I don't know. I don't hear it. I feel like I sound like you guys, but maybe not.
It's just a few words that I'm like, oh, there's the Canada. I love it.
Yeah. So yeah, I would definitely go to the States. We really want to go to Iceland as a family, and probably Scotland. We tried to do a vacation once to Mexico. It was great fun. We had a great time. But we learned that my husband wilts in the heat. Apparently he is like so Canadian that he cannot be in any hot, humid weather. Otherwise he's just like a puddle on the ground. So we'll probably stick to cooler climates.
Sounds good. It is finally, well, and depending, I guess, on where you are at in Canada, it might always be cooler there. But for us, at least, it's finally feeling like fall. So what are some of your favorite fall activities?
It is fall here. We had like our hard frost last week and then it's warmed up again this week. So that's kind of nice. I think we're as a family going to go to the pumpkin patch, you know, like just go. That's just like one of those things. It always feels so like just fun. It's just a tradition. Mm-hmm. We go pick up pumpkins and wander around and stuff like that. Other than that, I think I just experience fall with like this like fleeting sense of I love it. But there's like this deep existential dread because I know winter is coming and I am not a good Canadian and I don't like winter and it's so dark and cold and it's, so anyway, I'll stop whining about winter, but I'm always like, oh, fall, it's so lovely. But it's like, I know that it's just about gone. Yeah. So,
but winter is coming, right?
Totally. Like I'm very dramatic about it, but winter is coming. And every day that it's like gets dark sooner, I'm like, no, it's happening.
Yeah, I think I'm going to like institute like cozy winter here. So like candles every morning, lots of fuzzy blankets, lots of coffee, tea, things. Yeah. Just like so it – because it does. Like it can get – like I like cloudy days, but I think it's when it's like day after day after day after day that it gets a little like much. So surround myself with the cozy.
And we we used to live in like the mountains where it was just gray all the time. At least now we're like in some open prairie. And so it's like we have a bit more light, but
Well, do you have a favorite fall drink?
Well, it's
or
like
treat.
Yeah, coffee season. So I'm just like, I'm all into my – I have an espresso machine. So every morning I'm making like some sort of ridiculous latte and
nice.
And I just excuse it as like this is how I get my milk, my calcium every day, is I just make sure that I just put it in my coffee. So I'm sure it's like, it's healthy, right? I'm going to call it. But yeah, no, we're not going to look at how much sugar I put in there anyway.
It doesn't exist. Yeah. And then lastly, what is one piece of writing advice that always comes to mind?
I think for craft advice, like, it can be so overwhelming. But the one thing that I love all the time is, like, write that first draft to yourself. Write the story to yourself. Just get it down. And I think because often we're like, oh, I want to write it well, or I want to learn, and I want, you know, get all this information. And it can be so overwhelming. It paralyzes you. You know, instead of, like, just writing the story, you're like, oh, don't use an adverb. You know, like, you get all, like, kind of caught up in, like, caught up in, like, things that are, they have their place. But until you have the story down, I just don't think they should be the forefront in your mind. It's just write the story. Tell it to yourself. You're going to be able to fix everything else without, like, drowning yourself in all the shoulds, you know?
I love it. Love it. Okay, so before we officially say goodbye and jump off, where can people find you online and where can they purchase your book?
So I am primarily active on Instagram. You can find me, I think it's just at Katie Stein, two E's on Katie, just because.
You're extra like that. No. Yeah, I'm extra like
that. And then on my book, like, actually on my Instagram, you can find the links to, like, it's kind of, it's wide. So you can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or all the kind of usual suspects for that sort of thing. In Canada, you can find it in Indigo.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, you guys. That's awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Exploring the Blank Page. You can support this podcast by clicking the support button at anchor.fm/exploringtheblankpage or by subscribing on your favorite podcast app. You can find us on Instagram at Exploring the Blank Page Podcast and individually at Kristen Crum and at Create Explore Read. Until next time, stay safe and get creative exploring the possibility of your blank page.